All right, great having you back with us on this Sunday morning as we get ready for Giants baseball. We bring in the professor, Ron Wotus. Well, how are you?
Good morning, Marty. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Very, very well. And I was thinking about River Islands there. And, you know, you love the dogs. You and Lori love your dog. Do you guys go to a dog park?
We do. We have more play dates than the dog park, but we do go to dog parks as well, especially if, you know, there's a lot of good animals there. Sometimes they're overcrowded. And I believe that I think I know where you're going with this, because you got to have a place for your dog to run,
right,
and your dog to play, especially a big dog like ours.
Yeah, River Islands has the dog park. That's what I was thinking about. Yeah. And, you know,
well,
the dog park is a community unto itself, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I've met more people since I've had Makana, our dog, you know, other dog people, and only because of the dog. You know, it gets to the point where you know the dog's names, you don't know the dog's parents' names, but going to a dog park or taking your dog out there and paddle boarding at River Islands is something I see a lot of dogs do when I'm up at Lake Tahoe and different lakes. There's so many things that the dog brings to the community, and River Islands has a lot of activities for dogs as a dog park as well, but other activities as well for people to enjoy.
Well, I like that. Very good. Hey, it is the Jewish New Year. It's Rosh Hashanah that starts tonight. So I want to wish everybody, all the listeners, a happy, healthy New Year. And you too. Well, I hope everything is good for you. And 5783, how about that?
5783.
That's the year. That's the year on the calendar.
Is it really? Wow. Well, it makes me think of my friend Bruce Richmond when I grew up in Connecticut. He was one of my close Jewish friends, and got to learn a little bit about, you know, the Jewish life and the holidays, et cetera, et cetera. So I hope you enjoy some matzo ball soup and some challah bread today, Marty.
You know, you're exactly right. Well, you're on it, challah and apples and honey. So everyone should have a sweet year, and that's the deal. All right, very good. Hey, good knowledge. I like that. All right, the professor, it's Sunday morning. Let's get into some baseball right away. And last night, watching the game, of course, I thought of you. There was a play at first base with Wilmer Flores, bases loaded, a ground ball to him. He doesn't tag the bag, throws home. Bart thinks he's tagged the bag, so he's got to tag the runner. And meanwhile, it was nobody was out after it was all said and done. So let's talk about that play a little bit and how that goes down and who's got to communicate.
Well, you had the bases were loaded and the infield was in. They wanted to cut off the run in a 1-1 game in the fourth inning, I believe it was.
Right.
And a big chopper, a chopper to third. And, you know, Flo, when he caught the ball, you're playing the infield in because they didn't want the run to score. So I think he felt, you know, why try to stutter my steps to touch first base and then throw home? The priority when the infield is in is to get the out at home plate. And it would have, if he tried to touch first, you know, he stepped right over it. You know, it would have made it very difficult to get the out at home. So he just stepped over it, threw the ball home. Now, it's a difficult play for Joey Bart. You know, the angle where he's at, he's getting in position to get set up. And you can't tell when Flo kind of straddles the base whether he kicks the bag or he slides its foot across it. So, you know, I think, you know, it's a very difficult play. And I heard on the broadcast, and, you know, JT Snow said, you know, he would yell tag, tag, tag if he touched the base. And, you know, when you play a position every day like JT has and know the ins and outs of every play that happens, I think that's great communication. But in this scenario, you know, Bart really has no idea other than watching the play on what transpired. And if you're Joey Bart, you're not going to stand there and expect it to be a force. If you think he might have hit the bag, you're going to make the tag, because it would be worse if you didn't try to make the tag and, you know, it was a tag play. And, you know, the other side of it was, I mean, the guy at third got a great jump. So you always have to be aware with speed on third, how close the third baseman is to the third baseline, because that ball was chopped. And, you know, Joey got the tag down quick. But it, you know, that runner got there awfully fast. So you got to credit the Diamondbacks for getting a good jump at third and getting down the baseline as well.
Boy, great analysis. You know, it's so funny, Will, to listen to you break this down. You know, you watch a play at the ballpark, and it seems so simple. All right, ground ball to first, didn't tag the bag, and, you know, Bart thought he did. But then when you break it down, you realize there's 100 moving parts that take place.
You're right, Marty. Well, it is, because when you watch that, it looks like, how can this happen? And I just tried to explain how it does happen, and there's really no true fundamental there that you follow. I think what JT said was great. If you do touch the bag when you throw the ball home, you know, scream tag, tag, tag. And, you know, Joey's got to look the best he can. But if he's unsure if he touched the base or not, and I don't know what his explanation is, you know, he's got to go ahead and make the tag.
Good baseball. Good baseball. Well, that play was one thing, and then the other complicated, well, and we've been doing the show together, what, for 12 years already, something like that. The throw from the outfield sailed past the cutoff man, and I'm even sure the cutoff man was there, and moved the runners up to second and third, then a base hit after that cost him two runs. Boy, that throw by the through the cutoff man is just critical part of the game.
It is when you play close ball games, and it is, you know, when you want to execute. And, you know, I look at those things. Look, it happens to all of us. You know, we make errors, we miss cutoff men. But if it happens more than once or twice, then it's a fundamental mistake. It's a mental mistake for me. That's something that needs to be corrected. And the players, you know, need to correct that. And, you know, one thing I always looked at as a coach is, if something is happening too often, a mistake is being made, I watch, you know, I expect the player to go out and work on it. I really do. If you don't work on it or make a physical adjustment in the moment, it's not going to get corrected. So that hurt the Giants. That extra run moved up. They got the base hit, not recording the out on the ground ball with the infield in. That's another run. So in reality, I know Cobb's had a very good year. I know the defense at times is hurt him behind. I mean, he led to that inning on his own. He gave up some hits, but, you know, I think he was frustrated because when those mistakes happen behind you, it just compound things. And in reality, he should have gave up three runs. And sometimes when you give up some hits, you want the defense to pick you up, right?
Yep.
So it is a team game.
Yeah, it is. Boy, what a game last night. And it cost the Giants five runs in the fourth inning, and they lose it 5-2. The professor is with us. Well, it's interesting listening to you break this down. It's not easy to coach big leaguers, is it? Really, because they get to the big leagues, and, boy, to do a lot of coaching with them, you have to really get to know them. It's not simple.
Well, you know, one thing I learned in my first few years in the major leagues, it was much easier in the minor leagues, obviously, because you have a little bit more of authority and hammer on over the players, and even playing time. But as a coach in the major leagues, you don't control playing time. A lot of these guys are stars. You know, everybody has some sort of ego. Some are way bigger than others. And the number one thing I learned from coaches before me and what I tried to adhere by and learned in the minor leagues is building a relationship of trust. And if you have some mutual respect and trust with the player, and he knows you have his back to the point where you're trying to help him, they're going to listen a lot easier. You just don't go up to a veteran guy and try to start coaching him without some sort of relationship. I mean, you can do it, and it happens. Sometimes you have to do it. But I don't think you're going to have that long-standing relationship that's going to you know, help you when you do have disagreements if you show the player first that you care about him. And a guy that comes to mind is, you know, talking about mutual respect, is Dusty Baker. And I just wanted to mention it. You know, they won 100 games over there in Houston again. And, you know, and mutual respect is a two-way street. You got to have respect for the player and what he can offer, and you got to have respect for the coach and what he's trying to do. And if you have that, you can better withstand some, you know, disagreements along the way. But I look at Dusty and what he's accomplished. Look at this guy. I mean, World Series, Game 7, he gets let go. Then he goes to Chicago, right? Goes to the National League Championship Series. They've never been there. Then he goes to Cincinnati. That team's 20 games better there. Then he goes to Washington, wins 97 games, loses in the first round of the playoffs again because of us, the Giants, and he's let go. And now he's over in Houston doing, you know, going to the World Series and winning like there's nothing to it. And I think he's a good example of a guy that really knows how to manage the ego in the player in the major leagues.
Boy, good analysis. And, of course, Dusty is a Hall of Famer in my mind. I don't think there's any question. I think he is going to be a Hall of Famer. Along with Bruce Bochy, a good legacy of Giants managers, really good. In the news this morning, Don Mattingly apparently says he's not coming back to the Marlins next year. It made me think of the Dodgers and Mattingly and you and Boch and all those games against Mattingly and two trips to the mound and everything else. You guys had some good battles with him.
Yeah, we did. You know, the Yankee influence ended up in L.A. with Joe Torre, right? And Donnie was there as the bench coach, and then it handed it over to Mattingly, and, you know, he continued it from there. And, you know, those were our rivals, and we were pretty evenly matched back then. You know, we would get after it back and forth. Of course, you had the Bonds dynamic involved. You had the Manny Ramirez dynamic involved. There was a lot of excitement, and there was a lot of interest in those series. And of course, the great moment for us was when Boch got Don Mattingly in his, you know, he was might have been his rookie year, or he was just a young manager, you know, going up to make a talk to the pitcher, then leaving the dirt, leaving the mound, walking back to it, and then deciding to go back to say one more thing. And of course, that's two trips. You can't do that. So the pitcher has to be removed from the game. And that was an interesting moment, no doubt.
Who caught that? Did Boch catch that, or you? Who, do you remember who caught it?
Oh, he saw it right away. I think we all saw it right away, and Boch was out of the dugout, you know, before he even had a chance to say, you know, look, you know, he was gone. He was right by the steps, and Boch was all over it. And, you know, you're licking your chops when sometimes you have young people out there and you keep your eyes open. You'll see something that, you know, they can give something away, whether it's sometimes a young third base coach or a manager, whether it's giving signs or something during the game. So Boch was all over it. And you know, it makes me think of Mark Halberg, right? How such a great job he's done at third base for the Giants this year. You know, his name has hardly been in the news, you know, and that's a sign of a great third base coach.
Boy, that is good. You know, we've talked about the toughest play for a third base coach, and it's the broken play. It's the play where the ball goes down the line, and you got to figure out, can I score the guy from second? You know, a hit to the outfield, you know, the arms, the angles, the way they're leaning, and your runner. But a broken play, well, explain that one, because you see that a lot. And I was thinking of Hallberg. He hasn't had many broken plays yet. He hasn't had to deal with it.
Yeah, he's had a few, but you're right. Those are the ones that get you, and we've discussed it many times for a couple of years now. And I think he got caught on one this year. And in our conversation, he said it was a broken play. And why the broken play is so difficult? You know, this is a game of repetition. You know, and when you know a guy's arm and you know his depth, and the ball's hit to the outfield, and you see where your runner's at, you have the timing of the whole play gauged. But when an infielder dives for the ball and it rolls away, maybe, you know, you can't really tell. 10 feet, is it 15 feet? And you got to make a quick decision. Or guy slides in the third and they overthrow third and it goes by him. Your initial reaction is to go, 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 go. And then it hits the rail and bounces right back to the third baseman. So there's a lot of variables in there that can get a third base coach. And, you know, Mark and I both agree. If you have a slow runner in those broken plays, you got to be a little less aggressive on sending. If you have a fast guy, you can be a little more aggressive. But the bottom line is, Marty, as you well know, is the scoreboard. Are you winning? Are you losing? The number of outs? Who's coming up? If you don't have all that in the back of your head when the play happens, you're probably going to make a mistake.
Well, I've said it many times. I'm glad we could say it again, year 12 here. The manager's job is tough, but that second toughest job is the third base coach. I firmly believe that. I really do.
Yeah, a lot of tough decisions in the game. And, you know, I think it's tough for the simple fact is there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes, whether it's a pitching coach or the bench coach, or, you know, the hitting coaches getting the guy to hit, you know, the pitching guys with their game plan. But if you make a big blunder in the game, you know, nobody sees those other things as much as in the moment when 40,000 people see you send a runner with nobody out and it gets thrown out at home plate. You know, that's when the boo birds show up.
So when that happens, how do you what do you do? How do you rationalize that?
Well, you know, you have to have thick skin, number one. And, you know, it's a good thing they have helmets now coaching third because, you know, I've got a guy thrown out at third base with nobody out before, and I like to go down and take my helmet and slam it against the wall as hard as I can, and that makes you feel a little bit better. But you got to keep moving forward. You can't get tentative, you can't get shy coaching out there. You just have to do all your prep, like I said, the scoreboard, the outs, who's coming up, and make the best decision that you can make in that moment. And sometimes, you know, when you mess up, we've talked about this before, I'll just say usually it's a concentration thing, whether you're an outfielder or a third base coach. Maybe we didn't go over all the scenarios that you should have, and there's a broken play, and you send a guy and you realize, oh, shoot, there was only nobody out. I can't get him thrown out there. I should have held him. We got two opportunities to get him in.
Boy, great part of baseball with the professor on a Sunday morning. Well, some other news this week. First of all, the Pujols news. Well, look, you've seen his whole career when he first came up to the Cardinals, and, you know, he could steal bases, and he did a whole bunch of stuff. But for me, Friday night, 699 and 700 in one game for this guy, 21 homers this year, 15 after the break. Give me your thoughts on Pujols, maybe a little perspective on his whole career.
The first thing that comes to mind is, you know, he did it in Hollywood in L.A., a team that he played for. I thought that was special with the energy in the ballpark there. And he's obviously doing it with St. Louis, you know, where he spent, the majority of his career and really, you know, cut his teeth and made his mark. But 700 home runs, you know, it's there's only a few players that have hit more than him. He's been a tremendous player and ambassador for baseball. You know, as great as he's been on the field, you know, you hear the same thing about him off the field. And I've had plenty of opportunities to talk with him. And you know, he always makes you feel very comfortable. And he makes you feel like he knows you. And in talking to a lot of Latin coaches and players that know him, he's a special person. He does a lot of good in the game. And he's done a tremendous job on the field. And you mentioned it, though, when he was younger, you know, it's kind of like the Barry Bonds things. You know, he's twice the size now as he was when he first started, and he could steal bases, and he was even stealing bases up to about 5 years ago. He was such a good base runner and a heads up guy. He would time a pitcher, or he just had that instinct that he knew a guy wasn't going to pay attention to him, and he'd take off with that running lead. So I'm happy for him. I'm sure it was a great moment for him and his family. And all the Pujols fans.
Yeah, good part of the game. And it was funny, I don't know if you saw it, but Beltre, his friend, was sitting in the stands. And when he crossed home plate, he went right to Beltre to sort of shake his hand. And then he went to his teammates. How about that?
Yeah, I did see that. And I didn't know who was in the stands. So I thought that was awesome as well, to watch that whole
good
thing.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Good stuff. Yep. Absolutely.
That was good stuff. I'll tell you, Craw made a play last night, Will, and I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but a ball was hit at VR very hard, and Carson Kelly, the catch was running, which helped. Goes off VR, goes up in the air, I don't know, 15 feet, and Craw catches it in his bare hand, and he's already in throwing position and throws Kelly out of first base. And I haven't seen many plays like that. Did you get a chance to see it?
I didn't see it, but immediately I've seen Craw make that play several times. And the other guy that comes to mind is Omar Vizquel, because Omar Vizquel used to catch the ball barehanded all the time, a similar play like that, or a high chopper, not the ball that ricocheted off somebody. And, of course, I wasn't a big fan of it, but he never missed one. So it's like, hey, yeah, use your skills. That's the only chance Craw had to make that play. And if you think back to the old videos of Brandon Crawford in Double A doing all the trick stuff behind the back, bare hand plays, that's why he's able to accomplish it in the game. He's had tremendous hand-eye coordination and defensive skills his whole life. And, he uses them, and that's the only chance he had to make the play. I didn't see it. I'm going to look for it now, but I really liked the play that he made in Colorado as well a couple days ago when he dove full extension in the hole and then was able to give a perfect strong throw. I think Estrada was at second base to get the force at second base. You know, that's a more difficult play in my mind, but the other play is certainly a lot more exciting to watch because you don't see it very often.
You know, it's too bad there are so many free agent shortstops. The Giants need help. We know that. They need some offensive help, some veteran help, because that's a position he can stay there. He's okay. They don't need to upgrade short. They got other places they have to do it. So I think he's okay to play again. I just think he makes all the plays, and the bat is getting a little bit better here at the end of the season, but he's just a steady influence. And you lose Longoria, perhaps, and maybe Belt. You need Crawford.
I think that's a great point, Marty. We have, you know, a lot of areas to improve the club, and Craw signed, you know, through next year, and he's been the greatest shortstop in the Giant organization of all time, and his ability to play short is still better than anybody that we have on board. So I think, you know, the key is putting the money into places where you can build a club, and to your point, Brandon Crawford is still a winning player at shortstop. So I'm sure he's going to get the opportunity to play a lot of shortstop next year, regardless of what happens.
Yep. He's closing very well. I like it. I like what I see with him. A couple of other things. One, we had an unfortunate incident, the double play bar and grill, which was right across from Old Seal Stadium at 15th and Bryant, burnt down a couple of nights ago, and it was a meeting place for baseball people for years and years, memorabilia and all that. Did you ever get a chance to go to the double play?
No, I did not. You know, I wasn't even familiar with it, to be honest with you, Marty. That is disheartening. You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, in Scottsdale when Don and Charlie's didn't burn down, but, you know, Don Carson, the Rib King, you know, he closed up shop. And that was a similar meeting place, which where the organization had all their ownership dinners, et cetera, all the baseball people, anybody that's a baseball person that's gone to Scottsdale or to spring training in Arizona found their way to Don and Charlie. So I wish I would have seen it, Marty. I wish I would have seen it.
Yeah, I went to luncheons there. I think Matt Cain, I met him for the first time there when they did a program and he was a rookie or just had come up. But all the old-timers used to go there and had all sorts of memorabilia right across from where Seal Stadium was, well, at 15th and Bryant. So at some point, drive by there and take a look. You get a perspective of what baseball looked like in San Francisco before Candlestick and everything else. Boy, good point. One other thing I wanted to mention. Mark DeRosa. Well, did you see this, that he's going to be the manager of Team USA? And I know you what do you think about that one?
Well, TV opens a lot of doors.
As you know.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, Mark DeRosa was always a guy when he played, and he played for a lot of different teams, that was a great teammate, was a good player in his day, and, you know, he approached the game the right way. He, you know, he wasn't afraid to speak up. He wasn't afraid to get on one of his teammates. And those are the type of guys that a lot of them end up being managers because the way they approach the game. And Mark had that as a player. So I'm not sure who's appointing, obviously somebody with MLB.
Right.
I'm not sure appointing Mark as the manager. It's a little unusual that he hasn't been on the field to coach or whatever, but it really isn't, because you see it all the time. You see a lot of these old timers come back to, you know, coach the USA team or the Olympic team or this or that. So no, I'm happy for him, and there's one guy on his staff that I'm real happy for as well, and you know who that is.
Who is that? Go ahead.
The bullpen coach. I don't know if you've seen it, but Dave Rigetti, Rags.
Yes, you're right. Good. Yes, thank you for refreshing my memory. Absolutely. Do you ever do any coaching in that stuff? I know Boch is in France doing the French team. Do you ever do anything like this?
Well, I was going to do the French team. Actually, I got involved with them and helped Boach get involved with them to lead the team. I was going to go ahead and do it. And actually, in 2020, in the World Baseball Classic and spring training, I was heading down to Tucson to participate in the World Baseball Classic with Boach on the French club. And then COVID hit, and that was canceled that day that I was traveling from Scottsdale down to Tucson. Of course, then our spring training was canceled. But that was it. You know, I haven't done anything in the World Baseball Classic, but I've traveled to Holland and also to Ireland, you know, with baseball organizations, teaching the game of baseball is all I did, but not in the World Baseball Classic.
Do you speak French?
Oui, oui. No, not at all. It's like when I joined the Italian club and my last name is Wotus in San Francisco. I had to sit up there for 15 minutes and explain to the members how Wotus is from Polish, Italian descent. So I had to bring my mom's birth certificate to prove it to them.
That's funny, funny. All right, good stuff on a Sunday morning. Well, well, we got one more week to go here. So we'll get some good baseball news. Maybe Aaron Judge will do something this week. So have a good day and a happy new year to you, and be healthy and good things for you this year, Will. So take care.
Well, thank you for the blessing, and you have a happy new year, Marty, and or I should say Rabbi, and we'll talk to you next week. Look forward to it.
All right. All right. That is the Professor Ron Wotus here on a Sunday morning. Bill and I will kick it around when we come back right after this.